for the next 30 years or so, there is part of climate change that is baked in. And there's this anticipation of events like hurricanes, of extreme precipitation, and we're going to have to deal with these natural disasters. So it's really important that we push public officials to move in the direction of prearranged finance, push them in the direction of having institutions that permits the use of these resources in an efficient manner.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. When natural disasters strike, their economic impact outlasts the event, often by many years. The Mexican government has attempted to reduce the effect of extreme weather on people's lives by establishing a fund to finance reconstruction. But has it worked? Alejandro del Valle of Georgia State University is one of a team that analyzed its effectiveness, and he joins me now. Alejandro, welcome.
Hello, Tim.
After a natural disaster, what does a government typically need to spend this money on?
Immediately after a natural disaster, government would begin with emergency response. And so that means that they would launch search and rescue efforts. They would start humanitarian assistance for survivors. So that means the provision of food, medical supplies, setting up temporary shelter, that sort of thing. And those efforts will then, over the course of weeks or months, transition into relief and reconstruction efforts. So that means reconstructing lifeline infrastructure. In Mexico, where I work, the big ticket items are going to be the reconstruction of roads, hydraulic infrastructure, so that's the equipment to provide safe water, restoring access to hospitals, restoring access to schools, and to some extent, rebuilding housing. It's a very specific type of housing, low-income housing. And so, of course, what really matters here is not only having the resources and getting those resources, but doing so as soon as possible.
Yes, because a couple of years ago, I remember we spoke to Stefan Durkon of the Blavatnik School for Vox Dev Talks about the inefficiency and delay in a typical disaster response. What are the common problems that holds this up?
So actually, Stefan Durkon and Daniel Kirk have this wonderful book that I would recommend to all of your listeners, which is called Dull Disasters. And in that book, Stefan and Daniel, they do a bunch of things. But two things that I would highlight is that they really make compelling case describing the bottlenecks that are present in the provision of disaster aid. And so the two important bottlenecks here are that countries and multilateral organizations don't seem to plan ahead for this natural disaster. So they never have money ready at hand to respond to these disasters, right? So the disaster strikes and then they have to go and find those resources. And obviously, this is going to lead to delays. And then the second bottleneck that they identify is that even in cases where those resources are available, the infrastructure and the institutions to deliver those resources might not be, right? So there's no rules or a bureaucracy. There's no one whose day job is to make sure that those resources are spent fast and are spent well. And those things are a problem.
So to our story, and the government in Mexico, it's trying to do something about this by establishing this fund that mitigates the impact of natural disasters. Can you describe it for me? What are they doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the very nice features about Fonden is that the program is specifically designed to address the bottlenecks that I just mentioned, right? So unlike other types of disaster response that are common, the Mexican government, the federal government, doesn't go around looking for resources after disaster strikes. They have prearranged the finance for these disasters. So what that means is that by law, there's a protected budget allocation that states that 0.4% of the federal budget is going to go every year the disaster response. It goes to the treasury of Fonden, and they actually use it in a very sophisticated way, in the sense that, like an insurance company, they retain the risk for your everyday disasters. So for smaller everyday disasters, they pay it off from that money. But for the things that are less frequent but much bigger, so think of your gigantic earthquakes or your category 4 or 5 hurricanes, the way that they finance those is by using excess loss reinsurance and catastrophe bonds. So they essentially transfer that risk to capital markets. And in the space of catastrophe bonds, the federal government of Mexico is actually a pioneer in using this type of resources. So the punchline here is that they have money ready to go when a disaster strikes. And then the second part is that they also have the infrastructure to deliver these resources effectively. And so once again, here, the comparison with an insurance company is a good insurance company. So one good abstract way to think about Fonden is you can think of it as a parametric insurance contract that has an indemnity insurance contract on top that occurs when it's triggered. And so what I mean by that is, imagine that you are in a Mexican municipality. So a municipality is a second level administrative unit below the state. So it's the equivalent of a county in the US. Mm-hmm. And so in order for one of these municipalities to qualify for funding resources, what needs to happen? Imagine, for example, that there's a very heavy rainfall event. Like parametric insurance, the rainfall event has to be above a predetermined threshold for you to become eligible for funding resources. Once the event has triggered, as you would do with index insurance, then comes the indemnity insurance contract. So this is the part that looks like your car insurance or that looks like your homeowner's insurance. So some loss adjuster from the government is going to come over, is going to survey the damage, is going to figure out how much it costs, and then they're going to disburse those resources to deal with reconstruction. And it turns out that, in my view, it's a good way of dealing with the problem. So they're essentially combining pre-arranged finance with a set of rules that mimic what insurance companies do to disburse those resources.
Yes, I should say that Fonden is the name of the fund in Mexico. For Fonden, what category of events, how serious does an event have to be to trigger these payouts?
First of all, Fonden covers a broad spectrum of hazards, right? So everything from geophysical events to hydrometeorological events. Mm-hmm. Most of what Fonden is going to be covering during the period that I'm looking at it is going to be hydrometeorological events. So like 93% of expenditures are going to be, hurricanes, heavy rainfall events, and flooding. These are serious events, but they're not catastrophic events, right? So Fonden is making several payouts a year. So these are big events that require attention, but is not limited only to the most catastrophic events, right? This is not catastrophe insurance. This is disaster insurance. One other precision that I would make about Fonden is that the resources are primarily geared to reconstruction of public infrastructure and low-income housing, right? So this is not about insuring everything. It's about insuring these categories.
Now, your project was to evaluate how well Fonden has worked to create an economic recovery in the regions that are affected by these events. But to do that, surely you need to have some regions to compare to it that are similar, that were affected by the weather but didn't get a payout. Where do you find those?
So this is the part where the rules are actually very interesting from a research perspective, because they actually provide me with a very nice research design to isolate the effect of Fonden. So as I mentioned before, in order for you to become eligible for Fonden resources, you need to experience an event that is above a predetermined threshold. And so what's really nice about this is that there's going to be a subset of municipalities that are barely qualifying for Fonden, and there's going to be subset of municipalities that narrowly missed qualifying for Fonden, right? So intuitively, what's happening here is that the underlying characteristic of municipalities are changing smoothly, let's say with rainfall, but at the threshold, the only thing that is changing between this group of comparable municipalities is that their eligibility to the program has changed. And so by comparing those municipalities that barely made it versus those that barely missed, I'm going to be able to make a causal statement about the value of the program.
And what data are you using here to measure the strength of the economy, the economic recovery in these areas? I would have thought that measures of GDP would be very hard to obtain.
They are super hard to obtain, specifically when you think about a Mexican municipality. It's a small geographic unit, and it's not only about obtaining GDP. We are actually interested in the evolution of the economic recovery over time, right? So this was actually a big challenge that we face in the paper. And so the way we get around this is we actually piggyback out of the good efforts of the United States Air Force. And so what they have been doing is that they have been collecting data on cloud formations for decades. And the way that the satellites operate is that they look for the reflection of moonlight on the top of clouds. But it turns out that in nights where there are no clouds, what the satellites are actually recording is human-made light, or the consumption of artificial lights, right? And Henderson and others over a decade ago realized that this measures of nighttime lights created by humans actually correlate quite well with economic activity. And so essentially, when you see that the economy is booming, you will see that the cities are becoming brighter, and that when there's a recession coming, that lights become dimmer. And so essentially what we're going to do is we're going to track economic recovery by tracking how these lights are changing over time, whether the cities are becoming brighter or dimmer.
Using this data, Alejandro, what can we conclude? Is Fonden working? Is it speeding up the economic recovery in these regions?
So it does. So what's so interesting is that because we're able to bring to bear this really rich data set with this nice research design, we can actually look at the whole profile of recovery, right? So during the first 4 months where disbursements for Fondan are taking place, we essentially find that eligible municipalities look exactly the same as ineligible municipalities. They are suffering from the shock that they experienced. But between 4 months and 15 months, we see an absolute explosion among eligible municipalities. So these municipalities are becoming much brighter, whereas the ineligible municipalities are becoming dimmer. So this is in the order of 6% increase in that brightness, right? So essentially what we're seeing is that there's this Fondan-led recovery going on, as I mentioned before, up to 15 months. And then over time, for the next 2 years, you actually see in month 16 and onward that the ineligible municipalities start catching up. And so the way that we think about this problem is that Fondan is actually accelerating economic recovery by at least 1 year. And that's something that shows that the program matters.
How detailed can we go on this data? Can we tell what type of expenditure works particularly well, or any particular regions that have done well because of how Fondan has accelerated their recovery?
Right. So this is something that we wanted to think about carefully, because it's not only about showing whether the program works, but why it works, right? Mm. Now, the challenge here is that because we can only observe the expenditures that Fondan performs among the eligible municipalities, we only have suggestive evidence indicating that road reconstruction seems to be the primary case. But so I wouldn't really pin down my hat on the exact type of reconstruction that matters. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, where I think the evidence is much stronger is thinking about the characteristics of municipalities that benefit the most. And as I mentioned before, we're thinking primarily about hydrometeorological events. And there's a bunch of things that local governments can do to make themselves more or less resilient to this type of events. So in the case of flooding, storm drains are something that could be a good investment. And so essentially, we compare municipalities that were better equipped in terms of storm drains versus those that were less well equipped. And essentially, what we find is that the ones that benefit disproportionately from the program are those that are harder hit because they're less well prepared. So the places that lack this infrastructure, those are the ones that experience the hardest shocks. And it's also the ones where the value from them benefits them the most.
Now, there's a lot of government money flying around with Fondan, isn't there? Do we know whether it's vulnerable to corruption or abuse in the way that the money's been distributed?
Absolutely. So with like any large government program, this is a concern that, you know, everyone has at top of mind. Mm. There are several reasons why we think that this is not a concern in the case of Fondan. So the first thing to note is that it's actually really hard to gain Fondan. And again, this is one of the advantages of having rules to do things. So when you think about the verification process using the rainfall thresholds, well, it turns out that it's really hard to game that process because outside of the National Weather Service, which is the independent agency that performs this verification, no one really knows what are the set of weather stations that are going to be used for verification. No one knows with certainty what the thresholds that need to be crossed are, and all that rainfall information is being reported nearly in real time, right? So it's actually really hard to game the system. The National Weather Service needs to perform this verification in a matter of days, so there's not a lot of time to coordinate. It seems like it's something that is hard. But it's also something that we can take to the data, and we can look at whether there's any evidence of manipulation. So something that we do is we can look at the density of observations around the threshold. And one good way to think about this is that if you were trying to get all of your political buddy municipalities into the program, you would just essentially push them to the other side of the threshold. And so evidence of manipulation would look like a lot of observations on the right-hand side of the threshold where everyone is eligible, and then very few observations of municipalities missing that threshold, right? So you're crossing them. And when we look at that density, we actually find no evidence of this excess density. We essentially find that the number of observations on either side of the threshold is roughly the same, right? And so that suggests to us that manipulation is not really a concern here. The other thing that you can do is you could think that the municipalities that are more effective at lobbying for resources are different in all sorts of ways from those that don't, right? So what we do is we assemble a bunch of characteristics of municipalities. So variables that measure the state capacity of municipalities, that measure their demographic characteristics, their geographic characteristics, their ability, so the funds that they're getting from the federal government for other programs. And we try to see whether these municipalities look different on either side of the threshold. And what we find is that they don't. Essentially, the municipalities look the same on both sides of the threshold. So both pieces of evidence indicate to us that, at least in the case of Fondan, this is corruption is not really a big concern. And part of this should be unsurprising in the sense that, you know, the rules are there to deal with this, but there's also a component of the way that the private sector is disciplining the public side. And so as I mentioned before, one of the ways that Fondan finances itself is this transfer risk to capital markets. There's excess loss reinsurance policies. And essentially what these excess loss reinsurance policies say is that the reinsurance company is on the hook after a certain amount of disbursements have been made. So there's an incentive for reinsurance companies to make sure that no frivolous claims are being paid, right? And so just the fact that we have these reinsurance companies that are also paying attention to the process makes it less likely that we're going to observe corruption on Fondan. And maybe the last thing that I would add to this discussion of corruption in large government programs is, anecdotally, of course, is that when you read the transcripts of the meetings of the Association of Governors, so these are the authorities of states in Mexico, and they gather every year, and you can read the transcripts, Fondan is a very popular program. They really like Fondan, and they will go out of their way to say so, but they really dislike the conditionality with Fondan. So all the time, they're suggesting to the federal government, we should definitely get a program like Fondan, but we shouldn't have any rules for it. So what that indicates to me is that, you know, that these rules are actually, they have bite.
If I'm the Minister of Finance, though, can I stand up in Parliament or go on television and make the claim that Fondan is good financial value?
I think so. I think that that claim can be made for a number of reasons. So when you think about the value of the economic recovery that we find, so we can actually use an elasticity of nighttime lights to GDP to figure out how big that effect is. And essentially what we find is that those municipalities grew about 2.5% faster for a year. And when you back out what the economic value of that program is, you essentially find that the value of the recovery is at least as large as the cost of Fondan. So that's the first indication that the program makes sense. Now, the second thing to remember is that there's only so much that we can learn from nightlights. Like, there potentially a program like Fondan can have benefits in all sorts of non-economic factors. And so in some follow-up work that I have, I actually look at the impact of Fondan on saving lives. And what I find is that the value of the lives that are saved are multiple times the cost of the program, right? And potentially there's even more benefits to the program. So I would definitely suggest that reorganizing disaster response in a model of pre-finance rules-based disaster is a good way to use those resources.
This is a really good news story, Alejandro, but the reason that we're covering it is that we've known about the problems of disaster recovery for years now, and we know that there's going to be many more extreme weather events in the near future because of climate change, but we don't seem to see many programs like this. Why are there not more Fondans in the world?
It's a hard sell, right? So if you go to a local official and you tell them that we should take funds that have multiple uses in society and we should set them aside to prepare for a disaster, to buy excess loss reinsurance, to do all these things, to set up a bureaucracy that's going to respond to disasters, that is going to be hard, right? Because the costs are borne today and the benefits or the potential benefits of rapid response are down the line. And it may very well be the case that you find, you know, this public servant who wants to do this, but down the line, it could be that the opposing political party will be in power when the disaster strikes, and the one who will be rewarded for the rapid response is not going to be the elected official today, but the elected official tomorrow. And there's a literature in political economy that essentially shows that there's definitely an electoral advantage to quickly responding to disasters, but there's very little electoral reward to preparing for disasters. And this is a problem. Now, in addition to this, elected officials should be skeptical of using resources in this way unless we're able to show them that there's value. And this is a literature that is relatively recent, that is very small. So part of the problem is that we just didn't know what the value of these programs were. And it's important to show these programs work, why they work, and to communicate this not only to elected officials, but, you know, to their constituencies so that they can ask for this type of programs to be implemented. As you mentioned, this is something that is really urgent. When you look at the IPCC report that was released a few weeks ago, what that report makes very clear is that for the next 30 years or so, there is part of climate change that is baked in. And there's this intensification of events like hurricanes, of extreme precipitation, and we're going to have to deal with these natural disasters. So it's really important that we push public officials to move in the direction of pre-arranged finance, push them in the direction of having institutions that permits the use of these resources in an efficient manner.
Let's hope that it is an inspiration for other programs around the world, because we will certainly be needing it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for the invitation.
If you want to read this paper, it's called Rules for Recovery: Impact of Indexed Disaster Funds on Shock Coping in Mexico. And the authors are Alejandro Del Valle, Alain de Jonfry, and Elizabeth Tadoulet. It was published in 2020 in American Economic Journal Applied Economics. That's volume 12, issue 4. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, we're here every week, and you can always find all our past episodes at voxdev.org. Or if you subscribe, why not do it now? They're on your phone.